Okay, with Janet Jones, Shelter is the feature screenplay. Is winner of the Comedy Film Festival. Really interesting script. Got a movie th theater setting, tropical storm setting. It's really a script about a woman kind of figuring out what she wants out of life, I guess. That's how I took it. What did you, is that your thematic, Jana?
Absolutely, just trying to walking her through a process of trying to understand her past, her present, and her future.
Past, present is so. Is there some autobiographical elements in the script? Because it feels very real.
I lived in off that island in Florida for a long time.
What's the island?
And
So people don't know, what's the island called?
well, the real island's called Anna Maria Island. It's
Okay.
off Bradenton, Florida. And there's a Holmes Beach on it, but it in the script is called Holmes Island. And a friend of mine, Sarah Holmes' family, is founded that
Okay.
island. And so, and I've studied movie theaters and written a book about them. So I have, some a pretty good understanding of old movie theaters and their importance in a community.
So let's jump on that before we get to your script. So you wrote a book about like old movie theaters. Can people
I
get it,
did.
buy this, find this book somewhere?
Yeah, oh yeah. It's called The Southern Movie Palace: Rise, Fall, and Resurrection. And I studied six different theaters in six different cities in six different states, and kind of trace their history. But the theater becomes like a portal to understand a city because they're, from the rise in the 1920s to they're falling apart in the 60s and becoming like porn theaters and stuff. And then in the 70s with the preservation movement and people beginning to understand theaters once again as an important element of community.
There seems to be a pattern in Western society of that, where like something is very profound, it goes out of favor, and then it kind of gets a resurrection when people realize how important
Yeah, that's because they're a bunch of dummies. But
it
yeah, and I wrote a book about film archives too, which is the same sort of thing, about the importance of old film and people just dumping them and letting them go, and then trying to find them or recover them because they're such an important part of our cinematic history.
Yeah, 100%. Well, it really is, not only like, especially in the last 100 years, not only is it cinematic history, it's our history. Like,
It is, you're
right?
right. Absolutely. And it's such a beautiful documentation of the past, but we let so much of it go. And that includes, home movies too. I'm a big fan of the amateur film as well and what stories they have to tell us.
Like, you mean people's like eight millimeter kind of our cassette tape
Totally,
movies?
absolutely,
Because now
yeah.
everybody just has a phone, right? So they can they they're we're documenting our lives a lot more profoundly, I guess, now, right, with our phones.
We are, and the concern, I guess, is that with that technology will also change, and these things will also begin to disappear. When Facebook finally goes belly up and all that stuff on
Do you actually think that's going to
Facebook.
happen? I think that it's part of our, it's like too big to fail. It's part of our identity now, like these social media things.
Yeah, but the technologies will change. They just do. So we'll forget that it's important as the next thing comes to be. So
Gotcha. So that's what, that's sort of your book. I found it on Amazon. We can do a link on the podcast, The Southern Movie Palace: Rise and Fall and Resurrection. Yeah, it's like I said, it's like it seems like a metaphor for a lot of things, and you're using kind of like the cinemas. Like I live in, I'm from the Toronto area, and like Toronto's is very much the same, where they all have these like famous movie theaters, including at the festival that we do ours at the Carlton. And basically, it's been around for over 100 years, and like they want condos, right? Like a lot of these, like they, because the property's worth so much value where they have, like, especially in these big cities, right? Where these theaters are, it's the property that has the value to it, not the theater itself.
That's right. And that comes up in Shelter too, yeah. Right? When the guys want to turn it into a antique store for their wives so they can turn, you know, go and golf and do all the other nasty things they're doing. So
the nasty things they're doing, so they're using the antique store as a distraction so they can go off and do what they want to do.
Exactly. So their wives will be too busy to worry about what they're doing on their golf carts.
Sounds where your it shows us where your ideology is at. That's interesting. Okay, so tell us about this particular script. Is it a comedy first? Are you there for the laughs when you're writing it, tone wise?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I have a hard time sticking to one genre when I'm writing in both scripts and my books and essays and stuff. But there's also a romantic element to it. It is a love story as well. So, and I think that I don't think I go for laughs. I just think that I write funny. I don't mean to necessarily. Everything I write turns out kind of funny. I don't, you know, so it just turns out that way. And, it is, you know, there is a love story there, and, but it's also a kind of absurd, in some places, because of course life is that way.
Yeah, and then I guess like a natural disaster kind of like shocks her system a little bit and kind of puts things in perspective, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that's pretty timely, right? We're dealing with natural disasters. I mean, weather disaster, and climate change stuff that, you know, really does cause people to reconsider. Well, I don't think causes them enough to reconsider. Yeah. In Florida, you know, there's hurricanes all the time and they just go, okay, we'll rebuild, right? And I'm like, oh my God. So they don't quite ever figure it out, you know, but yeah, and her ending up in the shelter with Chip and that kind of liminal space also, I think, helps her kind of understand what's really going on too.
Because if you look at you, because I know you seem like a film historian, there's this is these scenes of romance have occurred in the past, like recent, like in past famous movies where a man and a woman are kind of stuck in a secluded place and romance develops because of that. They get to know each other, I guess, right?
Yeah, because all the things I think that they're dependent on their identity, that they, you know, it kind of disappears. Now she's in a shelter where community members are and stuff that she knows, but nonetheless, with the weather station in there and everything, and, you know, there's that kind of constant monitoring. I think that shows up in a lot of my stuff with the screen, you know, that there's the constant camera kind of, you know, showing us what we're doing as well, which is when she and Chip kiss when they don't think the camera's actually on. And that's the kind of impetus that changes things and where they have to reveal their situations that they're in romantically at the present.
So you said you called this in your blog interview that this is a love letter to cinema, like in terms of like the romantic slapstick comedy of like the 50s. I guess that was the famous era of what you're.
Yeah. Yes. And the movie theater, you know, that's the right. Theater, I mean, yeah. The movie theater part, the kind of traditional romantic comedy. It's pretty gentle. You know, there's not, it's not something about Mary, right? It's a more gentler love story than perhaps some of today. The references to the archive, the film archive, the show me the money, you know, there's other nuances, subtle nuances to other films throughout it.
And I said slapstick. I think I meant screwball. I meant the screwball.
Right, screw. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's a great era of cinema. And so I kind of throw in all of that in there. And it certainly informed my, you know, I'm a film professor, you know. So it's just my life. And I also teach writing, like media criticism and screenwriting and stuff too. So yeah, it wasn't far-fetched for me to write this, you know, because of just my experiences with cinema.
So what do you, so that's what you do for like your professor? You're like a film professor?
I am.
Can you name the school? Are you allowed to name the school that you teach
at? Sure. Oh, absolutely. I teach at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. It's pretty close to the Grand Canyon. It's up in the mountains in Arizona. Everybody thinks Arizona is just, you know, desert. And in fact, we got over 130 inches of snow this winter. So we have a pretty... but it's beautiful mountains and everything. And it's a beautiful school that I'm very glad that I get to teach there. They've given me so many opportunities. I came from Florida. I was a professor at University of South Florida and I taught more critical things. And I came here and they're the ones that actually gave me the opportunity to start more in screenwriting and film production and stuff. I wasn't trained to do any of that. And they offered me the opportunity to start teaching those classes, which taught me, which I learn everything by teaching in. So that's really how I started the screenwriting. I've never taken a screenwriting class or anything, but I teach them. And so boy, as you know, that critique and reading stuff, you know, and that's the thing I so appreciated with you is the really thoughtful feedback. I mean, I'm sure everyone appreciates it, but as a professor.
Not everyone appreciates it, yeah.
But as a professor,
yeah.
How much effort that takes and how much thought that takes, especially when you're reading one story after another. I mean, I have all these people's, all these characters in my head, my own characters, but then even my students' characters will keeps in there too, you know?
Yeah.
And so it takes a lot of energy and effort and thought. And so it's deeply appreciated.
That's a great testimony because obviously we extend it to people in the industry. It's like a whole like team and they come in and out, depends on their jobs. And I love, thank you very much for saying that, because sometimes people get so close to their material or we put a lot of effort into getting that. Sometimes it's like, I'm saying most people are on your side, but a lot of sometimes people are very much like, I don't like that. You don't like me. You're biased. Like they start throwing stones at you, right? Like about how, oh, this person doesn't like men. This person doesn't like women. This person doesn't like black people. No, you try to be journalistic when you're reading a screenplay. You try to like get to the story. You try to like remove your biases, right? So, but anyways, I just went on a tangent there, but because I really appreciate what you just said.
Yeah, and I do understand, you know, I mean, I've been critiquing people's books, their screenplays, their essays, you know, everything for a long time. And nobody takes it more personally than screenwriters. And people write books, it takes them 5-10 years or whatever to, and they still don't take as personally as screenwriters do. So I guess it's a very personal art.
Well, it's the individual, because I've been doing this for a long time, right? It's all about boundaries and expectations. So basically, it's if you submit a screenplay to our festival, you wherever your expectations are, right? Like some people have the expectations like, oh, this person's going to help me sell my script and they're going to make me famous or I have my script so great. So their expectations and boundaries towards you are unrealistic, right? So they get, so then if they, so if that's their setting, that's their situation where they're at, and then someone like yourself, say you write do the coverage on them, and they're reacting to that perspective that they have, right? That unrealistic perspective, right? You know what I'm saying? Definitely. So it's all about the individual where they're at. But if you're balanced and you're like been this for a long time, then you take people's feedback for a grain of salt. You know what to choose, you know what not to choose, because you know your story best, right?
Sometimes. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it can be a murky process, you know, writing a script, especially a feature. You know, because it takes a lot of people a long time to get one finished.
Yeah.
I can write a screenplay in 3 months or so, you know. I'm pretty careful, I'm pretty disciplined. But if it takes you a long time, you can have a hard time kind of remembering. You get lost in it, I think. Yeah. And you forget your mission, if you had one, and you get kind of lost with your characters and where they're going. And which is why I do subscribe to the beats, you know. They really help my students, they help me. And, you know, some of my more avant-garde students are like, oh, this is, you know, this doesn't, you know, work for me. But I'm like, but if you can, you know, work within, every art has a constraint. Right. And so then if you can fulfill those constraints and mess with them at the same time, then, you know, that's where you really got something going. And I talked to him about the Salvador Dali Museum in St. Pete, Florida. And like, it's a kind of a chronological tour, and it starts with his original works, and they're beautiful and they're very formal and traditional.
Yeah.
And it's like he had to know how to do all that before he went wild, you know? Yeah. And so.
Oh, so that's really interesting. That's how they set up the museum and his evolution, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's actually a really interesting idea to do a museum, like to set up that process.
It is. I think it's great for every kind of artist to see that.
So that's a great segue to your script, because in your blog, you said that you don't have to say how long ago it was, but you said this is the first screenplay you ever wrote. You wrote it in 4 months and then you put it away. And then you wrote 3 other screenplays. You wrote a book. You wrote an essay. So I'm assuming that's at least a few years. That's some time.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was, and then you returned to it. And then you came back to it.
Like, can you tell us like how long that block was until you returned to it?
Yeah, it was like, it was the very first thing. I am like, okay, you know, I'll read some books. And of course I'd studied film. So that was, you know, to my advantage. And I wrote it. And then I've never thought, it was just a practice thing. It was just to get like the formatting and stuff, which, you know, isn't, that was the thing. It's like, oh, it has some formatting issues. But that was because actually I had rewritten it. But anyway, and so then I wrote 3 other features, I think, and a short, which has done really well. And a book about sculpture in Detroit. And then I was taking a shower and I thought, oh my God, I've got to rewrite Shelter and I've got to change who the main character is. And I like just got out of the shower and started. And it was like, oh. And, you know, because I am a pretty intuitive person and I am clear-headed enough and healthy enough to like be able to hear my intuition and like, okay, I'm ready to rock. And then gosh, to rewrite it only took about a week. It was like over Christmas vacation, I just finished the semester and it was like, boom. And so I just sat down, I had other stuff I needed to do, but professors during Christmas vacation don't like, you know, vacation. But I was like, this is what I need to do right now. And so I did it. And you guys were the first who I send it to.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, I'll just get some feedback, you know? And so that was the best. I got good feedback. I got cheerful feedback. It was like, okay, so that's great. Like all the things I've learned teaching and doing more writing paid off, you know? So.
That's amazing.
That's an amazing story.
So when did you, do you remember when that shower was, like how long ago that was?
It was in December. I mean,
oh, so it's only been like 5 months, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned
the vacation. I don't know if it was a year ago or like.
Yeah, no, it just happened, and so because I was like, oh, this one, it seems like it has potential. You know, it was Chip, the guy was the main character, and I'm like, why is the guy the main character? That doesn't make, you know.
Yeah.
And so, well, because it was my first script, and so I like just like I was then obsessed rewriting it, and it was so much fun. I love it when I'm obsessed.
Was it? I could be just speculating, but like, is it because you know that we live in a different time now that people maybe in your mind that they'll accept this main character more in today's world than because she needs to be the main. I can't even imagine Chip being the main character in this film.
Oh, no kidding, right? Yeah. And well, I mean that makes sense. That's smart. But no, it was like, girl, this is your story, you know. Why do you have a guy telling, you know? So it was just really like a really personal.
Because if I was your therapist, you can really dig deep into that comment right there, right? So.
Right. Yes, I'm sure she would. So it really, and then it just changed everything. And I had confidence in it. It's like, no, this is something like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's producible in terms of that's a story that people want to spend lots of money on. I'm not sure because it's quirky, you know, and it's on an island and on all those things. But then it was my story, and it was like, this is something, you know, worth letting people read.
Well, if I'm like, I'm like an industry person, I'm on your agent. I see this as a script that's perfect for like an Apple or Amazon or a Netflix streaming service, right? Where you attach a nice actress to it. She has a great arc. She has a great character, right? And it's a perfect kind of like, let's relax at home with our loved one and watch this fun film for 2 hours, right?
Right. I'm interested in writing stuff that like has limited locations, limited characters. Yeah. So this one has more characters than some of my stuff does. And is affordable, like to produce, yeah. You know?
It's a perfect budget for one of those, like in an actor, in an actress, it's a perfect role for whoever, an actress that needs a script like this, needs to make a movie like this where she's in every scene, she's carrying the film, right? So
yeah and I think that there's a real, you know, I mean I don't really have any interest in writing films that cost $100 million to make or whatever. I think money can be spent better, like on climate change and feeding the poor and stuff like that.
Those million-dollar movies create a lot of jobs. They create a lot of jobs.
Okay,
right?
Okay, yeah. I'll. All right, I'll write one then.
No, I'm just saying it's not in your wheelhouse. Yeah, it's a really great script. It's like it's a great story about like how you just all of a sudden just came back to you. It's just like this screenplay came back to you. And like most people who write their first screenplay, they don't even have the file saved. I'm assuming you have the file saved and you can go back to it easily and you're ready to go.
Absolutely. Hey, I wrote a book about archives. I save the important stuff, right? So
now nobody can complain because everything can go in the cloud, right? So
absolutely.
Right. But only people's garages are only so big, right? So back in the day, right? So So when you were doing that, to go back to that theater book, when you went to those, you lived in those like towns where you researched those six theaters that you picked?
I did. I went, I mean, I didn't live there. I lived in Tampa, and it was when I just started my professoring, and I would travel to, I went to Memphis, Atlanta, Birmingham, Durham, Biloxi, and then the Tampa theater too. And part, there's a component in there that's about their racist past. These were all segregated theaters. And so in the preservation, how do you tell that story? Like, you know, because you're preserving the physical space, but you also have to preserve the discourse, you know? Yeah. And so they don't want to talk about it, right?
It's a very common thing now, right? Like, I know you wrote it 20 years ago, but that's a very relevant discussion that's happening now, right?
Yeah, especially in the South.
Yeah. We stole the land, right? So basically, Canadians, Americans, we stole the land. And so everything we have is not really ours. But then how far can you go? Like, what's the line, right? About like, and all these landmark kind of buildings probably have sketchy passes, right? To a certain extent, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I live in Flagstaff. I'm right on the edge of the Navajo Nation. Yeah. You know, Flagstaff's one of, and my university is one of the biggest Native student populations in the country, which I love. And but you know, talk about stolen land, yikes. I mean, yeah. I'm sure my house lives on stolen land.
Yeah, that's what I'm so basically call, so how far can it go? It's an interesting discussion, right? So
yeah.
Even movies, Lord, right? Really. Like, look at, like, are we going to cancel all these movies? Like, I'm watching these, like, I'm watching, like, Barney Miller today, right? And there's, like, some really, you know, not so good comments about gay people, right? So what are we supposed to do? Like, banish that show and not talk about it, right? It was a time. I'm not saying it's what they said it was right. I'm just saying it's a time that they lived in that moment.
Right. And so I think that you can, like, kind of rewrite the story. And like, okay, so just real quickly, I wrote about this amateur film called Navajo Rug Weaving. And it was made by a white guy in like 1939, Tad Nichols. And he doesn't, it's beautiful film about this Native woman, Sally Peshlakai, who's weaving a rug, you know, and from shearing the sheep all the way to cutting it off the loom. And Tad Nichols has had a relationship with her, not a friendship with her. And it was all good, except when he went around touring this film, he didn't mention their names. He didn't even say where they lived. He, you know, kind of made fun of them in some ways. He just like, here are these exotics that kind of live outside of history. And okay, so what do you do with that film now? Well, I rewrote the script and did all the research so that we know her name. We know that they actually built the set with him, that, you know, went and, you know, gave all the background, all the things, like her husband babysat the kids while, you know, all these things that you don't know from this film or the script that he had.
Yeah.
But now we know all of that stuff. And now it's an important film to Native weavers, because now they have a source material for their own weaving.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so I think like it was problematic, but then you can create new information about it and it kind of recovers it in a way. So
no, that's the way, that's an amazing kind of I don't know, allegory or analogy to basically the past in a lot of ways, where like it doesn't look that great. Like Eisenstein's films are kind of racist, right? But then he taught the modern people editing, right? Like kind of like how a new editing style. So you can take that, what he did, and then you can kind of throw away the other stuff, I guess. Again, in a sense, that's what you're saying, in a sense, we're like...
Right, but not throw it away, because we have to understand that human beings are complex and they're both good and they're bad. And so to tell the whole, like, here's the whole story, you know, about all these things. And we are just as guilty as all those people. We just don't know it yet, you know, in 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, like how he dealt with COVID probably. Yeah.
Is that what you tell your students?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I showed them a short film the other day from 2008 and they were like, oh, you know, this is ancient history. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. Somebody called somebody a lesbian in it, you know. Well, he was a bully. He wasn't a good guy. Yeah. And, you know, they're like, well, this would never get made today. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I listen to them, though. They have a lot to teach me, too. So
yeah, it's interesting.
I'm paying attention.
Interesting thing. Well, I could talk to you for hours. Why don't we, we're going to turn your script into entire kind of reading, and we're going to do a script movie as well with your fantastic script. So why don't we should come back and talk again when those things are done, perhaps, because I think that you got your fountain of information. And because I'd love to talk about your students, but I don't know. We don't have any more, there's not much time left. So
okay. I'd be happy to. It's so fun to talk to you today. So this is great.
So let's talk again. Well, like I said, there's new more stuff from our festival coming to you later on. So
okay, sounds great.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.